So let's read the I'll read the translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna and dancing. They are just like the ocean of love of God, and they are popular with both the gentle and the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. Whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone, and they are fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Thus they are engaged in missionary activities meant to deliver all the conditioned souls in the material universe. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are very much enriched in understanding Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of impersonal liberation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted loincloths, treating themselves as mendicants, but they were always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and they bathed always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who are always engaged in intensely worshipping Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in the transcendental land of Vrindavana, which is filled with peacocks and flocks of cooing swans, cuckoos, and cranes. In Vrindavana there are also beautiful trees full of fruits and flowers, and having roots inlaid with all valuable jewels. With great delight the Goswamis bestow upon the living entities the boon of the goal of life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and bowing down in a scheduled measurement. In this way they utilize their valuable lives, and in executing these devotional activities, they conquered over eating and sleeping and were always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, who were sometimes on the bank of the Radhakunda Lake, sometimes on the shores of the Jamuna, and sometimes in Vanshivata. At these places, they appeared just like madmen in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who chanted very loudly everywhere in Vrindavana, shouting, O Queen of Vrindavan, Radharani, O Lalita, O Son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhan, or are you under the trees on the bank of the Jamuna? Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness. So this is a very wonderful song by Srinivasacharya, one of the great acharyas in our line. And does anyone have any questions or comments or any particular verse or point from this song to discuss? Most of you probably, you're already familiar with the six Goswamis, the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and descriptions of the six Goswamis in Srila Prabhupada's books. Nectar of Devotion was a book written by Rupa Goswami that Srila Prabhupada translated in a summary study form called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Nectar of Instruction was also by Rupa Goswami. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were actually like prime ministers of Bengal at one time under a Muslim king. Although they came from Brahmin families, but they had been rejected by Hindus because of, or but they had re- been rejected by their caste because they were servants of the Muslim king. But they were loved by everyone. They administered the state and collected the taxes. They were very wealthy aristocrats and very learned. And they were learned in all sciences, in mathematics, in philosophy, and also in languages. They could speak Arabic and Persian and, you know, of course, Bengali and Hindustani and also Sanskrit. They were very, very learned in studying all of the revealed Vedic scriptures. And as described in this song, they gave up their positions. In fact, the Nawab arrested Sanatan Goswami and kept him in jail, and he had to escape and become a sannyasi, ended up going off the beaten path and fasting and struggling to get to reach Lord Chaitanya. And they became mendicants, and on Lord Chaitanya's order, he sent them to Vrindavan, which at that time there weren't so many buildings there. Of course, that was the place of Krishna, but the place where Krishna performed his pastimes had been forgotten and lost in the history of time and a lot of the places. And Lord Chaitanya ordered them to go discover those places and point them out and sort of excavate the different places and establish the principles. Lord Chaitanya instructed each of them, Rupa and Sanatana, very personally in the whole science of Krishna consciousness and all the conclusions of Gaudiya Vaishnava, of Lord Chaitanya's explanation of the Srimad Bhagavatam and of the entire conclusions of the Sampradaya, and instructed them to write. And they wrote, you know, thousands of verses, hundreds of thousands of verses, and helped establish these principles and, you know, establish the practices of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And now Sanatan Goswami's book, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, has been made available in three volumes by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. It's a wonderful book. We should take advantage of all these books that have been made available by Srila Prabhupada and his disciples and read them. They're full of nectar. So did anybody have any anything that struck them from this song or anything they'd like to discuss? Yes?
In the third verse, I believe, in the translation, a statement, it says, they can purify all conditioned souls from the reaction of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. So I was wondering what the process is that when they sing these songs in front of people who are conditioned souls and may have reactions from sin, as to how does it melt away the sin through those songs?
That's a very nice question, and it's a very nice statement in here, how they are actually purifying all the conditioned souls. Because like I said, they've written this transcendental literature, which is full of these songs about Govinda. And it's when we hear the authorized descriptions of Krishna and his devotees and the qualities of his devotional service, and we hear especially in the association of faithful devotees, it actually works on our heart like a medicine. And it clears away dirty things, unwanted things. It corrects us where we're wrong. It immediately, we hear all these things about the holy name of Krishna, just chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra itself. It counteracts the reactions of millions of sins. People have to understand this. Nowadays, in modern times, people are less concerned about sin and the reactions of sin. But the fact is that as we go through our lives, we do different things to maintain ourselves and our families, to earn money, to enjoy ourselves and whatever, that end up causing harm or disturbance to other living entities. Everyone is competing with each other. And because of these sins, especially when we do, bad things like stealing and cheating, lying, and other bad things. In Krishna consciousness, we follow four regulative principles. No meat eating, for example. It's very sinful to be participate in the slaughter of the animals through meat eating. No intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. And so many things are there in this society. And they cause reactions, which, you know, they cause terrible reactions in the form of misery, material misery that will come to us later. And so we should be very concerned, not just that we will experience material misery, but also it will make us ignorant of Krishna consciousness. We won't be able to come, which is even more concerning, that we won't be able to come to Krishna consciousness. And that we hear from these authorized sources that when we speak like this about Krishna, about the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna's instructions, and about the explanations that the six Goswamis have given us about Krishna and his pastimes, that they clear away those things from our hearts, and they make us, not only do they, this is explained in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that not only do they counteract the sins, there are various religious activities that we can take also to counteract sins. There are fruitive activities that are described in the Vedas and elsewhere in other religious traditions, and people do things as penance, so that they won't suffer severe consequences in the future. There can be different kinds of atonement involving fastings and different vows that one takes. But Shukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam describes, actually Parikshit Maharaj tells Shukadeva Goswami, at first he asks about that, and Shukadeva Goswami gives this explanation that there are these various material fruitive activities offered in the Vedas to atone for sins. And Parikshit Maharaj is intelligent enough to understand that Shukadeva Goswami is kind of testing him, because these material activities of atonement don't completely destroy that. They may destroy the reactions, but they don't destroy the propensity. The very root of our committing sins is our misconception of the fact that we're actually spirit souls and our actual nature is as servants of Krishna. We still see ourselves as material enjoyers who are trying to utilize the fruitive activities that are offered to us in order to counteract sins. So Shukadeva Goswami, it's compared to the bathing of an elephant, that an elephant gets dirty when he goes in the water and he throws water all over himself and he gets the dust off his back, but then an elephant, when it comes out of the water, will roll back in the dust again and throw dust on its back. So material activities that we undertake to counteract sins, and they are there and they really do counteract sins, but they also involve the same process of same material misunderstanding by which we engaged in sins in the first place, and surely again we will engage in sins. But it's explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that by hearing about Krishna and by performing devotional service, beginning with hearing about Krishna, that it goes in and it fries the very seeds of those sins. So that just like you may light a fire on a grassland and the grass will be all burned away and it will be left, you know, with just ashes and no grass on top. But the seeds are there underneath the soil and they'll spring out again and the grass will grow again. But when by chanting Hare Krishna and listening and hearing about Krishna, hearing with faith and attention to the descriptions of Krishna and his devotional service, it actually gets at the root, at the seeds underneath the soil, so to speak, in this metaphor, and it fries them so that they won't come out again, they won't sprout again. So it does both of those things at the same time. It counteracts the effects of sins very effectively and very nicely. You don't have to undergo severe austerities and penance. You don't have to fast too much and undertake difficult, uncomfortable vows to counteract your sins. It's much nicer to just hear about Krishna. But not only does it counteract so you don't have to undergo the reactions of the future, but it also treats the disease itself and not just the symptoms, which are the sins. It actually cures the disease, which is our misconception of who we are and what our purpose is. And it awakens love of Krishna in our hearts from which we'll become. When one loves Krishna, one automatically properly loves all living entities, and one doesn't commit any wrongful activity. Krishna says in the ninth chapter that if one is engaged steadily in devotional service, even if he commits very abominable activities, he's to be considered saintly. Sadhureva samantavya samyak vyavasito hi saha. And this assurance that Krishna says. In fact, in the next verse, he says, "Kshiprang bhavati dharmatma shashvach chanti nigacchati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashyati." That his devotee is never destroyed, and that he very quickly becomes righteous if he's a devotee, even if he's committing some activity which is against the codes of ordinary moral conduct. And so this has been discussed by a lot of acharyas. And the fact is that devotional service is so strong that it conquers all sinful activity and all misconduct, and it treats one like a medicine in the heart, so that it purifies all the things that cause one to cause trouble to other living entities, and actually gives one the opportunity, like the six Goswamis were blessed by Lord Chaitanya, that they could do welfare work for every living being by writing beautiful descriptions of Krishna and proper explanations of devotional service and how to engage in devotional service, and setting out the rules and regulations of our line. And Jiva Goswami put forth these great philosophical treatises that explain everything in great detail, with all respect to logic and analysis and philosophy, explaining so that no one can think that devotional service is merely some sentimental path, but it's actually suitable for the most rigorous of scholars, logicians, mathematicians, what have you. And by doing this, they were engaged in the greatest welfare for all mankind. So this, and Srinivas Acharya has given this this very beautiful poetic Sanskrit shloka, that they were saving everyone from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring on them transcendental songs about Govinda. You can just think of the songs about Govinda as some kind of liquid nectar that saves one from the results of one's activities. And also, the next line, that they're saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of impersonal liberation. So even further than saving them from the pain and suffering of the results of material sinful activities, they're also saving them from the misconception of extinguishing the individuality by merging into the existence of, and thinking oneself liberated by merging into the existence of the impersonal feature of Krishna. And by doing so, one actually loses the opportunity to taste the real ananda of having loving relationship, personal relationship with Krishna. Yes, Sunny Prabhu.
But it's explaining who are very much enriched with the understanding of Lord Chaitanya and his expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. And I was wondering if you can give some explanation to this, the Lord Chaitanya's, you know, transcendental qualities.
Yes. There's a description in the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita about how there was a song. I mean, this is just one example, but there was a song that was popular at the time of Lord Chaitanya, in which it was like a romantic song that said that, you know, I'm meeting you again after a long time. That very personality who stole away my youth is now again my master, and you know, and I don't remember exactly the song. Actually, it's described again in the fifth volume of when Prabhupada published it in seven volumes. But anyway, we're meeting again. But my heart is not satisfied here. I want to go under the trees. in the forest by the bank of the river. So this is a song something like that. So Lord Chaitanya was singing that song, and Rupa Goswami understood Lord Chaitanya's mind, and he composed another verse that said, you know, you are the same Krishna, and I am the same Radharani, and now I'm meeting you again after a long time, but I'm not happy to meet you here. I want to bring you back to the to hear the fifth note. You play the fifth note of your flute at the banks of the Jamuna under the certain tree. These are the same breezes blowing through the Kadamba forest. Anyway, I'm not remembering it perfectly, but it's very beautiful. So in other words, to answer your question, so Rupa Goswami understood Lord Chaitanya's mind. He understood Lord Chaitanya's mood of devotion in a way that nobody else could. And he wrote this verse on a leaf, and he stuck it in the thatched roof of his hut where he was doing bhajan, and then he went to take his bath. And Lord Chaitanya came there to visit him, and he pulled the leaf out of the roof, and he read it, this verse that he had composed. And when Rupa Goswami came back, Lord Chaitanya slapped him very affectionately, and he said, "How is it that you've known my mind?" But the Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, the six Goswamis, also Gopal Bhatta Goswami was a young child when Lord Chaitanya traveled to Rangakshetra, where his father had been the head priest of Sri Rangam Temple, and he got all of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So the six Goswamis were instructed personally by Lord Chaitanya, and they understood Lord Chaitanya to be actually Krishna himself, that he was displaying the highest mood of devotional service, which was the mood of the topmost devotee, Radharani. That he was not just displaying that, but he was embodying that and experiencing that, and able to explain those for those who were capable of understanding it, like the six Goswamis. He was able to impart that explanation to them. Since that time, it's become quite popular for people to, and their followers to claim that this one or another saintly person is actually an incarnation of God and so forth. But Lord Chaitanya was understood as Krishna by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, by many of the great sannyasis and learned scholars of his time. He was predicted in the scriptures very clearly and accurately, and the Goswamis also composed compilations of quotations from Mahabharata and Gopaltapani Upanishad and so many other places where these verses were there, and Srimad Bhagavatam, where verses were there that clearly were referring to Lord Chaitanya. I mean, specifically saying, his mother's name is Sachi, and his father's name is Jagannath Mishra, and he's going to be in a Brahmin family and in Navadweep, very detailed things like that. So anyway, the six Goswamis understood Lord Chaitanya and his mission and his actual personality and his mood, and they were able to explain this in their writings and explain this among the devotees. Raghunath Das Goswami was put by Lord Chaitanya in the care of Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was one of Lord Chaitanya's most confidential associates. And Swarup Damodar Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami kept notebooks of Lord Chaitanya's activities, especially in the last years of his pastimes in Jagannath Puri. Earlier in his pastimes in Navadweep, these things were written down by Murari Gupta and others, kept notebooks. So that we have today, in books like Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have authentic histories of Lord Chaitanya's activities and his words and his moods by people who heard. And Chaitanya Charitamrita was composed by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who had become blessed by Raghunath Das to understand these pastimes, and particularly he taught him based on these notebooks all of Lord Chaitanya's activities, so he was able to compose this fine biographical work that dealt with his Lord Chaitanya's later pastimes. Most of the pastimes in Navadvip were dealt in more detail in other works by Vrindavan Das Thakur, Lochan Das, Kavi Karnapur, and others. So it's important in this song that Srinivas Acharya is also recognizing that not only are the six Goswamis capable of describing the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, in fact, Narottam Das Thakur says that unless one understands the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in the footsteps of the six Goswamis, they won't be able to understand what is Radha, what is Krishna, what is Vrindavan, that they have to follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. And Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Lord Chaitanya is disclosing what Radha and Krishna, his pastimes were. This is something very special that Krishna revealed when he came to earth. His pastimes in Vrindavan are very intimate pastimes, very sweet pastimes. And Lord Chaitanya then revealed the importance of this mood of the gopis and this mood of separation as described in this song of how they're running here and there saying, you know, oh, son of Nanda Maharaj, where are you? Their mood is not to say, oh, now I have Krishna, and he's, you know, like some bhajans of other famous devotees sometimes say, you know, Krishna, you're mine, and only, you know, Giridhari, you're the only one, and, you know, I don't see anyone else, and I always see you. But the mood of the six Goswamis was, and the mood of Lord Chaitanya was catching fleeting glimpses of Krishna, and then this intense longing called Vipralamba, you know, when will I see you again? Where are you? How have I lost you? And Lord, it's actually a little bit spooky or frightening to hear how Lord Chaitanya was in so much ecstasy. He had no thought of his bodily comfort, and they had to control him. And he was in a room called Gambhira in Jagannath Puri, and he would lose his senses, and the devotees had to stay with him all the time, because in his desire to see Krishna, he would actually scrape himself against the walls of the room, and they would have to lock him in because he would get in trouble. They would stay with him and watch him, and sometimes he managed to escape somehow through the keyhole, and they would go looking for him, and somehow, sometimes they found him in floating in the ocean. He thought that he saw Krishna, and he ran and jumped in. He thought that the ocean in Jagannath Puri was the Jamuna, and he jumped in, and in his ecstasy, his body would become sometimes very, very long. Joints would slacken, the things that hold your bones together would slacken, there would be gaps. He was already quite tall, like 7 feet tall, but he would become in this form like very, very long, almost 11 feet tall. And sometimes he would withdraw in ecstasy, he would withdraw his limbs into his body. And one time the devotees found him in a cow pasture, and the cows were licking him, and his limbs had been drawn in to like little stubby thing. Anyway, I'm getting carried away. But Lord Chaitanya's qualities are very important to understand, and we won't really understand Radha and Krishna unless we understand Lord Chaitanya and the descriptions that he imparted to the six Goswamis, who then imparted in great works like Rupa Goswami's plays, Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava, Jiva Goswami's Gopala Champu. And Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita described these books, and although he didn't translate them all, he encouraged us all to read them. And some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples have been composing books, notably Shivaram Swami, in which he's used translations of these books and then read them and studied them and explained them in a nice format. One particular book called Krishna Sangati. Shivaram Swami says that this should be studied by advanced devotees mainly. But did I answer that question?